This. Hello everybody, welcome again. My name is Derek Gardner. Thank you again for joining the live chat show, which will be recorded and will be on YouTube. If you're joining on YouTube, thank you very much indeed. I'm honoured and privileged today to have Greg Ward with us all the way from Auckland, New Zealand. It's 11 hours in front of us. The New Zealanders have always been in front of us, and that's absolutely fantastic. And also, in front of us on COVID-19. I see that the lockdown had almost worked in New Zealand till a couple of Brits turned up on an aeroplane and messed things up. So I'm not quite sure how popular we are. Greg, thanks very much for joining us, and congratulations on that background you've got there. I know you're a TV presenter, and I would expect to see pictures of Auckland and your on the screen, your website, etc., etc. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, my absolute pleasure, Derek. It's a wonderful thing to be joining you from the other side of the world. And the great thing about Zoom, of course, or any of these platforms, means that we can connect right at the beginning of this whole COVID situation. I was talking with a number of clients who were, to be fair, as we all were, going into a severe state of shock. But the beautiful thing about the visual side of things, the Zoom, the GoToWebinars, the Microsoft Teams and so forth, is that connection is simply just a click away.
Absolutely.
That's all it is. The only thing that's changed is we can't meet face-to-face.
We can't believe that this was not available 6 months ago. Well, it was available, but we didn't know how to use it. Now, Greg, when we were talking, you told me you're actually a Brit, really. You were born in Hemsworth in Yorkshire. And you worked for KPMG in London before you emigrated. Well done. I didn't know we had a Yorkshireman with us. Lots of things going on up in Yorkshire at the moment. But tell us what's going on in New Zealand with the lockdown and with your Prime Minister, who we see, Jacinda Ardern, is held in very high regard around the world for her positive action. Is that how the New Zealanders see everything?
Yeah, I think the vast majority of people have, I think no matter which side of the political fence you sit, the work that the current government has done to ensure that we are essentially COVID-free, we don't have any community transmission cases. The only thing we have is in returning travellers who are coming here, who go into what was fairly strict quarantine. However, somebody escaped. Yes, it's a challenge to say that somebody escaped. Somebody managed to breach the security, get out and go to a local supermarket. So not knowing, of course, whether or not they are infected, it just makes the situation quite challenging. But overall, it's been a phenomenally well-run situation. If we look around the world, we're very, very fortunate where we are now. And I don't think luck has a great deal to do with that. I think there's a certain thing with the New Zealand psyche is that we'll also listen to reason and go, yep, that sounds like a fairly good idea. Well, let's still do that. And the beautiful lockdown and the closure of New Zealand, realistically, we all started walking out in the streets and in this beautiful quiet with no cars going around. And it was quite a peaceful situation, regardless of the fact that we'd all lost our businesses. You know, I'd lost every piece of business that I had lined up for the entire year. But for some reason, I wasn't overly affected by that. It was just this complete sense of something completely new, never experienced it before. But yeah, in terms of how our government's looking after it, they're doing a wonderful job, and the opposition have very little to go against. It's an interesting to see an impotent opposition not really being able to make any headway.
Yeah, well, many congratulations on that from all of us here in the UK. Now, over your left shoulder, is that a picture of Auckland Harbour? I do remember going there for a couple of days and having pretty much jet lag at the time. Can't remember much about it. That's Auckland, is it?
It is Auckland. That is the Sky Tower there, which used to have the distinction of being the highest tower in the Southern Hemisphere, but I believe there's a tower in Malaysia which has taken it over. But the building to the right-hand side of that, which is the second, in that picture, it's the second tallest building, was the Price Waterhouse, it's Coopers and Lybrand Tower. And I used to work on the 24th floor of that building there, so it's quite a nostalgic little picture there. When I got back to New Zealand, started working for Coopers in a IT tech role.
Okay, so when you worked in London for KPMG, you weren't an accountant. You weren't a number cruncher, as I like to call accountants.
No. And actually, I only held that role there for a year. I was working in the HR department in an IT technical support role for them in Salisbury Square, which was a cool way of getting into the computer side. I always done a little bit of communications, came out of the army, and I'd been in military communications there. So it was kind of a nice fit after a little bit of travel. So really enjoyed it, particularly enjoyed Friday lunch in the canteen.
Oh, Friday lunch in the city was down the wine bar in the 80s and 90s for us.
No, to be fair, I was.
I can't believe really what really happened there. There was quite a bit of business done there or not. Now, I've been looking at your website. In fact, I've been looking at your websites. You do a lot of things, don't you? You work on television, you're an MC, you MC conferences. In fact, that's how we met 3 weeks ago. We were both panelists on the Infrastructure Intelligence conference, talking about communication, negotiation skills, etc., with 150 people on it. But you also do an Elton John impression, I saw. Is that right?
That is absolutely correct. Yeah,
I think night is right for dancing, fighting. I think it's one of my favourites actually, and it was very good. So anybody that hasn't had a look at it, go to Greg's website. But tell us about it, Greg.
Well, I had this urge, I suppose it would be around about 15 years ago or so, that I'd always wanted to play piano and sing, and I quite liked the songs of Elton John. I wasn't a super mad fan, but I don't know, something about the music just spoke to me. So I started to learn how to play on the piano, and I'd always dabbled on the piano as a kid, and I learned guitar. It was my main instrument, played in bands and all that kind of thing. But I'd never really learned the piano. So I kind of learned to play the piano by playing Elton John songs. And once I got enough of them, I connected up with a local kind of talent agent here. And we started doing shows around the working men's clubs throughout Auckland and further afield, and eventually built up a bit of a corporate show. So from that, started doing it as part of the MC role as well. So it's something I do continue to do, actually, offer that. But it's taken on a life of its own, and I got approached when Rocket Man came out. I got approached by the record company here in New Zealand to do some guerrilla marketing by going out and being Elton on the street.
Really? Great.
Yeah. So we didn't get it off the ground, unfortunately. They started to have some cold feet about it and said, "Oh, we'll just get hold of head office and we'll talk to management and see what happens." It's like, you know, the death knell, right? Let's email and wait for the response. And I said, no, it's always much better to ask for forgiveness than ask for permission. Unfortunately, it didn't go ahead. But I had a wonderful job with a casino for the Chinese New Year. Ended up with a seven-piece band, eight dancers on stage, myself. I'm doing some really cool things. So got a bit of video of that, which actually I haven't released yet. So I'll have to get that up on the sites too.
You need to get it up there. Ask for forgiveness. Yeah. I think that's a fantastic takeaway, actually. Really is. Now, let's talk about the construction industry. I know you do a lot of emceeing in the construction industry. You do conferences all over the world. That's in a pretty tough place at the moment, isn't it? And you told me there's quite a lot of stressed out people in that industry at the moment.
There is significantly now even more than ever. And the challenges that we have in the construction industry in New Zealand are mirrored around the world. In New Zealand, it is the highest stress occupation in terms of suicide and suicidal ideation and in general people not being able to cope. And so this element with COVID has added another layer of stress to that. Which means that as an industry, it needs a great deal of support. And so I've got into the construction industry because of the work that I do, as you mentioned, with the conferences. So I've been doing work in New Zealand, work around the world with FIDIC, which is the International Federation of Consulting Engineers, which is how we got to meet via Andy Walker of Infrastructure Intelligence. And also with Consult Australia, and I've got some lovely connections in various different places as well, again, in the construction industry. And we often talk about how can we support the individuals who are challenged. And one of the biggest factors is we're men to the vast majority. And as guys, we don't talk. We don't talk particularly well. We don't like to reveal the challenges that we're going through. There's an element of, you know, by being vulnerable, we feel that we're giving people other people power over us. When actually, all we really need to do is to share and get these demons away from us. So there's a couple of organisations that have been instrumental, particularly in the New Zealand and Australian context. In Australia, an organisation called Mates in Construction got underway roughly 13 years ago, and has had some significant positive effect in being able to slow or reduce the suicide rates in the construction industry, which unfortunately has the highest statistics of anywhere, of any industry. So we in New Zealand have started in August last year. We've got a Mates in Construction New Zealand now, and that is having some really good headway. But like all organisations, it's always about funding and reach. How can you get more of what you need to where you need it?
I think there's two things there that which are interesting. Number one is the stress in construction because of the uncertainty of jobs, because people work for themselves, because they're probably subcontractors, so they don't actually know where the paycheck's coming from. Or is it the physical work? That's the first question. And the second question is that myself and some of my colleagues encourage people like mad to set up mastermind groups, to set up small networking groups. Will Kintish and I speak once a week and share problems and get things off of our chest. Now, I know a lot of guys don't do that. And in fact, I've been encouraging people to come on this. And it's one of the things I've been talking to one or two people about, you know, despite the fact I send out 4,000 emails on a Monday, you know, there's eight of us today and we're sharing. So let's go back to the first question, the construction industry. Second question is, Mates in Communication. I like that.
Yeah. So Mates in Construction. It's a great name. It says exactly what it is, right? It's everyone likes to. You can chat with a mate, and that's really the gist of that is all about. The stresses that come into the construction industry are not specific exactly to the construction industry. It's just that the demographic that works in this industry tends to not be the people who want to talk. You know, very blokey blokes. It's it's a hard job. It's, you know, and it brings in the hard men. Mm-hmm. So at the lower end of the socioeconomic scale, yes, there's the challenges of something like COVID. Well, you don't have any job security, so at this stage, people are relying on governmental handouts. Or if you were employed, there has been, in New Zealand, we've had wage subsidies, which have been given by the government. And of course, though they are supposedly to be passed on directly through to each of your employees, if you're claiming for it. And the vast majority of people are doing that. But I'm sure there are organizations that have taken an opportunity to shed themselves of employees, and that gives some stress there. But it's not just the sort of lower end of the spectrum. The stresses carry on, including where people are responsible for those employees, and of course they feel very strongly for them. There's a lot of stress in it, particularly also in the self-employed area, where you only have a certain amount of jobs ahead of you, and you've got challenges with income, you've got challenges with cash flow, and if you add into that challenges with relationships, and particularly as we get to sort of where I am, I'm 51 now, and around about this point in time, it's kind of a sweet spot really, where you end up with challenges in your financial situation, challenges in relationships, and a sense of where am I going from here, and where does the world sure. Where's the world going to take me?
Well, I'm looking forward to being 51 in about 10 years' time. So that should be pretty good, really, shouldn't it? So thanks for that. George, you're not war, talking, and all those things are just so important. Now, you help people a bit with mental management, don't you? And it's a subject that we have been talking about on this program. We've been talking about the mind body connection, that it's almost instantaneous. We found out through the behavioral psychologist recently. What work do you do there for people?
Well, I share my own experiences, and I'm quite more than happy to do that here as well, because I consider, I call myself one of the hidden. In 2018, I had a suicide attempt. And this, actually, I'll preface that at this point by saying what I'm talking about now obviously has challenging and can be challenging for other people. And what I would say is, please, if you feel that that anything that you're hearing was, or from me at this point is disconcerting or is bringing up challenges for you, there are multiple numbers to call. Unfortunately, I don't know in the UK what those numbers are, but seek professional help.
You would call the Samaritans over here or someone like that. So if anyone's watching it on YouTube, then as Greg says, seek professional help early as you can, and don't be scared to do that. Just pick up the phone and do it. Thanks, Greg, for that. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it doesn't matter where you're from, how you lead your life, or what industry you're in. At some point, the potential is there for it all to come to a head. And to be fair, there was quite a number of precursors to it, and certainly wasn't the first time I'd been in this kind of state, but it was certainly the furthest I'd ever gone down this path. Thankfully, although I'm pretty successful at most things I attempt, thankfully I wasn't at that. But the challenge for me was, I was actually at a conference in Australia. And I arrived there on Sunday night, had this incident, and the following morning, the convener of this conference said to me, I've got a challenge, a bit of a problem, and I wonder if you can help me out. Of course, as an MC, my whole role is, it's all about you. How can I help you? It's always this energy going out. And I said, yep, sure, what is it? And he said, well, I'm going to close the conference, and we've got a half hour slot, but I'm only going to talk for 15 minutes. And I was wondering if you could close with this final 15 minutes. What was the rub of this was that the conference theme was diversity, performance, and well-being. And he was going to speak about well-being, and he wanted me to speak along the lines of something in the well-being field. He had no idea what had transpired. So, of course, in MC mode, I go, yes, of course, absolutely. And so I made up some story. Well, half true story about some workplace bullying, and decided I'd do that. So 2 days later, we get to the end of the conference, and he stands on stage and he reveals this story about himself. He'd nearly drowned with his son in the surf, and he'd been rescued by a couple of surfers. He'd found them on surfboards, but he got to the point where he was really last breath kind of thing. So he got to shore. And from that point, started having these massive anxiety attacks about what might have happened. He couldn't sleep. He had nightmares, waking in cold sweats. And he decided that he would do something about it. So he went off and got swimming lessons. And he hated it. Hated every moment of it. And he was completely fearful. But he pushed his way through it. And what had happened for him here is he'd invited his wife and his son to come to this conference. And he was telling them this from the stage, and he hadn't revealed this to them. He'd been doing all this in secret. And it was this beautiful cathartic moment that I saw happen in the room, and the feeling there was amazing. And I'm still in crisis mode, but I realized that I can't tell this bullshit story that that is going to close the conference up. And so for the first time, I stood on a stage and I started telling people what was happening for me. I didn't go into any details of what had happened, but I just talked about the journey that I'm on, and how this role affects me, and there's very high highs and very low lows. And although I'm part of your group, I'm not part of that group. And you might invite me to come along, and it's all lots of bonhomie. But thing is that I'm going to end up in a cold hotel room in the middle of the night, three sheets to the wind by 3 a.m., and in a very bad and low place. And this was a regular cycle. And it was the first time I'd ever said this. And I walked off that stage and got halfway through the room, and someone had touched my arm, and it was a young lady. And she just said to me, thank you for saying that. I thought I was the only one.
Wow, wow, wow.
And that moment was the catalyst. It was the sudden realization that what I'd gone through had had positive impact. And by revealing it and talking about it, I'd had a positive impact on one person. And if I've impacted one person, how many other people had I impacted? And of course, I'm still in crisis at this point. So it's not you know, a fully formed idea, but it was the gratification of going, I've done something for somebody else. And over the course of the next 6 months, I came to terms with what I was doing and started to just talk. And as I'm doing now, being able to say, this is who I am. And I think it was about the same period, about 6 months later, my wife turned to me and said, you're the lightest I've ever felt in 10 years. And it was this moment of going, yeah, because I'm at peace with who I am. I'm at peace where I stand and fit. And so from there, I started focusing more on the speaking side of things to go, okay, so how can I repurpose this? How can I make this into something that will help other people? So I've created a presentation, went off to Canada and trained with Steve Lowell and Jane Lowell in Toronto.
They call it Toronto over there, but I Toronto. Call it Toronto, yeah.
And I had some real success over there, and I refined various bits and pieces. And now I do a piece called Vulnerable Leadership. And I say vulnerability is your leadership superpower. And I travel around that. In fact, 2 days ago, I was booked for another one. I'm flying down to Wellington because we can in New Zealand. Of course, we can travel around everywhere.
Yeah, you're lucky. Make the most of it.
So heading down next Friday to talk to a 12-person team around the same things. And it's really this. We have to share. We've got to open up, and that process of just talking about what's going on for you, it opens doors. And I love the Australian Are You Okay organization. So this is another organization designed to combat suicide. And it's really about having what's called an Are You Okay conversation. So you can ask somebody and say, are you okay? Now, it's a binary answer. You're going to say yes or no. Mm. But rather than doing that, I'll preface this by saying, I'm going to have an are you okay conversation with you, which has a completely different meaning. And then I can say, are you okay? And then it has a very different answer. And you know, I mean, we all know this. We'll see people and we go, there's something not quite happening there. It's not quite right. And we can
so Greg, you say that when you sort of intuitively realise that person.
Correct.
Because, you know, in Britain, I don't know what happens in Australia or New Zealand, but we, you know, we ask people how they are, but we don't want to know how they are. They start telling us, we're off, you know, we're off to the next person when we're networking, which sounds terrible, doesn't it? And I understand up to 25% of people have got some issues like this, even more than that. I don't know what the figure is, but with COVID, there's some serious issues.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lovely person who's working in the mental health field, Tasha Broomhall, and in Australia. And she's got a lovely, she says it's one and two. So if it's not you, it's your partner. So, you know, that's the over the course of your lifetime. There's a lot of different bits of research, but it looks like two or three in five, you know, is this number. And if you aren't directly affected, you will be affected by someone close to you. Mm. So it's imperative that we all take these opportunities. But something like that, asking an are you okay conversation question, you have to actually think about what the effect is going to be for you in terms of the time. You've got to say, you've got to give the time. If you're going to ask that question, you've got to be there for that person. It's an important, very important part.
Okay, well, thank you for sharing that with us, and thank you for sharing that story with other people. It sounds a great way of doing it, and of course, I guess you relive it as you tell the story, so that's a hugely brave thing to do, and congratulations on that. Couple of questions in the box at the moment, Greg, from Kevin in Chicago. When you lost every bit of business overnight, what was your immediate feeling, and what was your immediate action? What did you do?
Really good question. The process for me, and I'll talk about it from where I was. So I was in Australia at the time. I'd gone across for the Professional Speakers Australia Convention. And all of us, everyone around us, was having these calls. Everyone would get a call. They'd just go, I've just lost another one, just lost another one. It was just like this waterfall of things happening. I ended up back in my hotel room on a call to a client who was trying very hard not to affect people. Thankfully, we have a very strong relationship. He said, no, you're all called. We know we've paid you a retainer. We're not trying to get the retainer back. I'm just going to say, I'll repurpose that for you at some point. But it was that sense of a desert. All of a sudden, this one goes. And you don't know what to do in that moment. You just sort of shrug. We were all supposed to go off to the gala dinner that night, but there was a group of us who were sitting down in the bar going, I just don't feel like celebrating right now. Sure. And again, you're in a whirl because things are happening so fast. The only saving grace for me had been that 2 weeks previously, a client had said to me, I've just been looking at this COVID thing and we might postpone or cancel our event. And this was before anything major was happening. So I said, okay, well that's fine. We'll work around that when it happens. And then it would have been about 3 or 4 days later, I was attending a planning meeting for the conference, and I arrived into it late, and it was on Zoom. And I got in there and I heard him say, that's why we're canceling the conference. And so for me, this is like red rag to a bull. And also it was an opportunity because COVID hadn't happened at that stage in its entirety. And I was very bullish. And so I just jumped in and says, no, you're not, we're not going to cancel. We're just going to go virtual. We're going to take a 3-day conference. We're going to make it into a 1-day conference. We're going to turn it into a more of a television kind of feel and run it like this. And so I basically pitched an idea that I had no concept that could possibly be done to the level that I was pitching, but I just knew that there was an opportunity here and there was a way around him wanting to cancel the event.
Okay.
And so I'd had that conversation. So when we had everything started to fall over in Australia, I was already a week ahead, 9 days ahead. So got back to New Zealand. I had to quarantine for 14 days. And in that 14 days, I had this wonderful sense of I've lost everything, but I wasn't worried about the loss. What had come along with that was I'd removed all of the responsibility of doing that work. So yes, there's a financial aspect to it, but it was kind of like, now I've got this incredibly free area in front of me that I probably haven't had for 20 years. Because as we all do, we build our businesses, we've got forward plan and rinse and repeat. So this was like, wow, what could I do? Because I've got this 14 days in a room, I started building. I grabbed every bit of kit that I had, any kind of musical gear, any kind of piece of equipment, and I built myself a virtual studio sitting in here. And with an old garage light for my light, I had my different curtains, bits of paper. In fact, I've still got the paper up here that are diffusing my standard room lights before I got my main lights and so forth.
That's brilliant, Greg. That's brilliant. We're nearly coming to the end of the recorded part of this. So there's a couple of things I just wanted to ask you for. So all of us are going to be using Zoom, whether it's to speak to our loved ones, whether it's to speak to a client, whether it's to speak to some friends. What's your 3 tips in the minute we've got left for using Zoom?
I put this in 3 different ways. So I said it's the 3 pillars of digital presenting. The first one is technology. So understand the technology. And the biggest thing is audio. The first thing that we will forgive video. We know we've got bandwidth dropouts and so forth. Yeah. But if your audio is not crystal clear and clean, you're going to not going to have that connection with your audience. Okay. The second part of that is design. So you want to design your presentation in a way that is going to engage, because all you have is this camera, right? And in terms of that, when we're presenting down the barrel of a camera, you have to remember it's a one-to-one relationship. We think we're presenting to hundreds, but we're not. We're presenting to one person. We're having that beautiful little personal thing. but we're doing it many, many, many times over. So that's another factor to focus on. And the third part of that is behavior. So because we're not in the room and we can't judge or see necessarily the feel and flow, we can use the optics of the camera in a similar kind of way that we can do with if we're in a real life situation. So if you want to come in close to be conspiratorial, you can get up nice close to your microphone to be nice and quiet. You can whisper things. Or if you've got a room, you can get back and be big and expansive to pound home those points, making sure that you're not just always staring at a camera, because that's not human, right? We have that tendency, we want to flick away. Our eyes are always moving backwards and forwards, but keep coming back to the camera.
Brilliant.
Sorry, there's a lot of different points there.
No, there's a lot of points we could cover. And I did actually record on YouTube how to use Zoom, but I know I missed a lot of points. So I'm just going to sum up by thanking you so much for what you've done for us today, coming in from Auckland, because you've really shared some secrets with us, I know, which is absolutely brilliant. It's about... about 6 minutes past midnight in New Zealand, I think, now. So we are privileged and honoured that you've come on. Would you stay on for a little while after I stop the stop the recording to answer some more questions? And I'll unmute everybody. So Greg Ward, international speaker, MC, thanks for joining Derek's live chat show today. And I hope you'll join us again at some time in the future. Thanks very much indeed, Greg.